Hello everybody, I'm George from Ireland. Well, thank you for coming back to my channel. This is talking about Zhu Rongji, so no requiescat in pace to him, who has been summoned to his punishment, I wish, at the age of 79. So he was the premier of China, 1998 to 2003. He's the first one of those I could name, apart from Deng Xiaoping. I suppose those, well, Mao Zedong Zhu Xi, which I think, is different. Premier is not the same as president. The president was Jiang Zemin at that time. So yeah, he was a truly wicked person, a communist all his life. And he ran a very tight ship in an extremely oppressive society, which was airless, with no free expression, with no fair trials, where challenging state power was a crime. Where there were Lao Gai, slave labor camps for dissidents, holding political prisoners by the tens of thousands, the death penalty for crimes which would not attract the death penalty in even most countries that still use capital punishment. Even drug dealing, even of cannabis on a petty scale, that was punished by death. Theft on a large enough scale was also punishable by death. So someone who really didn't value human life, and already wasn't premier at the time of the Tiananmen Square massacre, he was still a senior figure in the Chinese government, and therefore he bears some collective responsibility for that. But his journey is perhaps not what you'd expect. He was born in 1928 into a family of gentry, and they were highly educated. So it was claimed that he was a descendant of Zhu Yuanzhang, who was the first Ming emperor. We're not sure if that's true. Anyway, he's a posthumous child. So his mother bore him some months after his father had perished. By the age of 9, his mum had died as well. So Zhu went to school. You might say, yes, so what? No, in China, the majority of people were illiterate back in the 1930s when he began school. And so he lived through the upheaval of the civil war, of the anti-Japanese war, beginning at Tsinghua University in Beijing, shortly after the Second World War, and when the Chinese Civil War had begun afresh. So, and he joined the Communist Party in the year that the People's Republic of China was established. So there he was studying electrical engineering. Remember, very few people had electricity in those days. So this was a real pioneering profession, and they began to electrify the country. Just about everybody finally has electricity in China. And I know a woman who was in a fairly major city in China in the early 1980s and said most people in that city still didn't have electricity. I forget which one it was. It wasn't Shanghai, Beijing, Shenyang, or Hangzhou. I know because I've been to all those ones. So it was a civil servant most of his life. Involved in the all the Maoist crimes, all the mania, the Hundred Flowers campaign. All right, a lot of people were, and there was 360-degree propaganda. It was difficult not to be brainwashed by these things. People called him a rightist during the anti-rightist campaign, for which he lost his job and so on. He was even expelled from the party. And people hadn't sort of forgiven them for having previously been well off, but eventually he was rehabilitated. Yeah, there was a terrible famine, the Great Leap Forward, 20 million people starved to death. We now know that the Communist Party killed more Chinese people than the Japanese did. Even sent to re-education school and had to do menial work, you know, caring for swine, disposing of feces, all the rest of it. But gradually he was forgiven and he was promoted again. So he knew what it was like to lose power. And I suppose the effect of those said, we're going to retain power at all costs. He lost all his status, been reduced to beggary. All right. And then he rose and eventually became dean of the university he'd attended much, much earlier. And then in the 1980s, rather ahead of his time, he began to form liens with the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Okay, and then he was mayor of Shanghai, right? Anyway, so that was it. His sponsor, in a sense, his patron, Jiang Zemin, had held that office just before him. So he rose in his coattails and so on. So he visited the United States. He met some leading American politicians. He'd learned English, actually, for his generation, his English was excellent because very few Chinese spoke English in those days. And so it went on. So he was part of those leading the transition to capitalism. But yeah, he really was a cruel oppressor in his lifetime. He wanted to benefit from exposure to the West, from stealing technology. And obviously when China was much weaker, much poorer, firm action could have been taken, but that was not it. Anyway, he strove to fight against corruption. His anti-corruption campaign was not very effective. He tried to have a sunshine policy towards Taiwan, not very successfully as well. He traveled the world and so on. He visited European countries quite a bit, and indeed India. And that's when relations between Beijing and New Delhi were almost cordial. So, yeah, that was it. He was married and he had two children. There's more than one child policy. And that was it. He died a wealthy man. I don't know if he has his grandchildren. So anyway, he said that he hadn't gone far enough with his reforms, really. But that was it. You know, China was obviously more developed, was wealthier because of his reign. But you've got to think of his many, many victims throughout his rule, died utterly unrepentant. So I suppose shows what sycophancy and conformity will get you everywhere. But, you know, it's a pity there's not a hell for people like that to go to. All right. Thanks for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon. Goodbye.